Blog Talk Radio.
Can anybody out there hear my voice? Does anybody out there really care for a missing child?
Good evening. And welcome to Voices for Justice. I'm your host, Michelle Bart. And tonight, April 4th, 2013, we sit down with the three families in search for their daughters, in search for answers, and in search for justice. Joining us for the first half hour will be Dr. Dale Archer, a clinical psychiatrist and also one of our founding advisory council members of our nonprofit, the National Women's Coalition Against Violence and Exploitation. Also joining us in a while will be our co-host, which is our NW Caves director of our Missing Persons Division, Dr. Shelley Schaefer. The chat room is also open. Log on to Blog Talk Radio, Helping Heroes, and click tonight's show. In the second half of the show, we will be taking your calls, but for now, we're going to bring on the families. We're going to speak to Kara Nichols' mother, Julia. We'll also be speaking with Raven Cassidy Furlong's mom, Tanya, and also Kayla Croft Payne's aunt, Karen. You can find out more about each of these cases by going to KaraNichols.org, RavenFurlong.org, and Kayla Croft Payne. org. We welcome everyone this evening, and I believe we have Dr. Dale Archer on the line.
Hi, Michelle. How are you?
Hi, Dr. Archer. How are you?
I'm doing well, thanks.
Well, welcome, welcome. We have three families with us this evening, and without further ado, I think the best approach, the first half hour, we won't take any calls. If you have any questions for Dr. Archer, if you're in the chat room, please feel free and add your question there and we'll bring it up to him. But for the first half hour, we would like the families to be able to ask the questions that they have been going through. I call it an emotional roller coaster, if you will. Kara Nichols went missing on October 9th, 2012. Raven Furlong, February 5th, 2013, and Kayla Croft Payne has been missing since April 28th, 2010. All three girls, teenagers, and all three girls very much loved by families that have not given up hope and continue to work towards finding their child. And I know that they have a lot of questions for you, Dr. Archer. So I think we'll turn it over to you, and you have Julia, Tanya, and Karen on the line.
Okay, very good. I guess that I just want to say my sympathy goes out to all of you ladies, and certainly in my field, the toughest thing that we have to deal with as a psychiatrist or a therapist is when someone has lost a child to death. And, of course, that has a finality about it that makes it so unbelievably painful and difficult. You know exactly what you're dealing with. So I can only imagine to take that to the next step and put the uncertainty in there in terms of where is your daughter? Is she coming back? Just makes it infinitely worse. And so certainly my sympathy goes out to all of you, and we just have to maintain hope that there will be a good resolution to this.
Karen, let's start with you. I know that Kayla, your niece, went missing April 28th, 2010 from Chehalis, Washington State, and you haven't seen or heard from her since then. So of all of the families on tonight, I know that the emotions are high with all of you, but going on 3 years, I'm sure you have a lot of questions or questions on how to cope and how to continue this emotional roller coaster. Do you have any questions for Dr. Archer?
The one thing that we're kind of concerned about is if we do find Kayla and she comes home alive and well, what should we expect to have to do for her?
Well, first of all, that's a good question. And also, I like what that question implies, that you still have hope that she will come home. And so I think that's very, very powerful in terms of thinking about that as a real possibility. You know, it just depends on what she's been through, really, in terms of what you're going to be dealing with. And without having any specifics in terms of, you know, who took her and why and what's happened in the meantime and all of the interim processes, it's really hard to say. You know, I guess you look at the worst case scenario with J.C. Dugar gone for 18 years, and you're basically having to re-socialize that person into society again. They've been out in such a restricted living conditions for so long. So hopefully we'll get resolutions here much quicker than that. But on the other hand, you're just dealing with it day by day. But I think it's very pertinent to realize that, yeah, there are going to be issues that have to be dealt with at that time. But in terms of telling you in advance what they will be, it just you just can't say. And every individual is different. You know, it's really amazing when you look at it, you think going through a set of circumstances, such as what we're presuming here is an abduction, in terms of how different people handle that. And that will be a good question to have to deal with at the time that it arises, and let's hope that it arises soon.
Dr. Archer, all three young ladies, the common denominator between all three of them was that they're dreaming of the big time, of the runway, being a model. We know that Kayla, in fact, had actually posted she was going off to a photo shoot. And we know that Cara Nichols and also Raven Furlong, although all three of them may not have ended up going somewhere for modeling, all three of them were in communication with grown men that they met online. And in Cara's case, I know that Julia and her family, Cara's been missing since October 9th, 2012, from Colorado Springs. And it's been emotional for Dr. Schaefer and myself with all of the things we had to overcome in order to get people to care about Cara in the media to know she was missing. Because of her online activity, how can a family continue? And Julia, I'm sure you have a question for Dr. Archer, but how can you continue to have that voice for your daughter when a lot of folks in society are pushing you back because of the direction and the activity that these girls chose to do before they even went missing?
Well, first of all, I mean, it's kind of interesting that we would be saying that aspiring to be a model is somehow bad or wrong or evil or whatever. It, you know, it's a dream that many young girls have, and why not? You know, I had a dream of being an NFL quarterback. Obviously, it never came to pass, but there's nothing wrong with that in and of itself. So, you know, I guess the two parts to the question, number one is, as the loved one of the missing person, you have to always maintain that sense of hope. And again, I use J.C. Dugar as an example, because after 18 years, of course, you would think that there is no hope. There's no way you'll ever see your loved one back again, and this beautiful girl that you once had. And then there she is. She's back, and she's alive and well. And so hope is everything. And never giving up, never saying that it's over, never accepting that she's not coming back, and always believing and maintaining that power of belief, is, I can't overemphasize how important that is. And that comes from within. It really doesn't come from the media or from what other people are telling you or from friends or other family members. That's something you have to hold on within yourself. Certainly the more the word gets out and the more we can publicize these cases, the better, because the greater likelihood, as in JC's case, that a security guard on campus is going to recognize her and say, wait a minute, there's something wrong here. You know, and I somehow something about this woman strikes my memory. So, yeah, we want to have this out there every single day when possible. But, of course, the reality of our mainstream media is that, you know, these cases have a short half-life. And you probably aren't going to get a lot of publicity on this again unless one of them is found. And all of a sudden they're going to be all over the news then. Well, a lot of good it does you at that point. So, but you have to keep trying, and you have to keep pursuing and keep pushing and keep forcing and keep that effort up, because that's part of the hope. I mean, if you accept the fact that, yes, I still believe in my heart that she is still alive, then all of your actions then become dictated on, okay, I believe she's alive. What do I need to do to get her back?
Do you think that the added additional emotional distress and emotional guilt that can come from law enforcement or other authorities that tell these families, which I know all three families have endured this, where they blame the families for doing media? In one particular instance, there's an email saying, you know, the mom decided to do the interviews in the media, and now it's spiraled out of control, where, in fact, with all three cases, we have discussed this numerous times, and we feel that these families are a step closer to understanding what's happened to their daughters because of the media, and yet law enforcement agencies are blaming the families for even doing media. How does a family continue? Because I know, like, I remember with Melissa Baum, the mother of missing 10-year-old, who's now a teen, Lindsay Baum from McCleary, Washington, we had her ready for HLN at one point, and they had to pull her off right away because law enforcement said, every time you talk to media, we go backwards, and we have to answer to bogus tips, so don't do it. So then she pulls off and feels guilty for even having a voice for her daughter, and I know all three of these families are in the same boat.
Well, I have to respectfully disagree with law enforcement on this one. And, I mean, I've seen and heard both sides of the case, and I get where they're coming from, that, yeah, that you are going to get a lot of tips that are going to come in that are not going to lead anywhere. But you know what? It only takes that one tip. And so part of their job is sifting through hundreds of tips if needed in order to try to find that one that maybe has some credibility to it. So I encourage folks to use the media and to put your story out there and to tell it to anybody that'll listen, whenever they'll listen, as often as you can, because you just don't know when you're going to find that one person that maybe heard it on TV and say, you know what, this girl kind of looks like that one on TV. I wonder if that's the same person. So, yeah, I'd say push, 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 get all the exposure you can. And, you know, let's face it. I mean, the longer the period of time that you go, the less likelihood of the police solving this on their own. They need input from outside sources and from tips. Then we hope that one of those is going to be correct. So I don't feel guilty for that. I mean, you're just doing everything you can in order to try to get that little girl back.
Julia, do you have any questions? Go ahead.
Oh, this is Tanya. You know, along those lines, Dr. Archer, one of my questions is, you know, the media has gotten some of the best information that we've had on my daughter, but at some point I wonder if putting her name out there isn't more risk, making her more risk than reward for these people who may have her. I mean, at what point do I worry about crossing that line and harming her?
But, you know, there's, I don't think there's any way to predict that. And so I think your mindset at this point has to be, what can I do to get her back? And clearly not doing anything and just letting the dust settle and all, it has a couple of effects. On the one hand, you want to feel that you are an active participant in doing everything possible to help. And believe me, there are no studies out there that says that, okay, the more you're on media, the greater the likelihood you're going to get a missing person back, or conversely, that it's going to make it less likely that you get this person back. And so we're all talking with our gut feeling on this. I mean, I don't have any proof. I can only say what I would do if I were to lose a child, how I would go about it, and how I would make sure that it was out there every single day when I could. So, and that's just my feel on it. But I think you just have to look at these scenarios and say, well, nothing is happening otherwise. And it's almost that it's as important for you to do it to feel like you are maintaining that belief and doing something active as opposed to sitting there doing nothing, which I think for me would drive me crazy to think that I'm not doing anything in order to get my child back. So, you know, again, you know, my advice on this has always been get the word out there any way you can. I understand that there are law enforcement people that say, oh, not all of them, but some will say otherwise. But I just don't agree with that.
Dr. Archer, I have a question about going back to what we were talking about earlier, where Karen asked what to expect if and when we get our daughters or nieces back.
I would just say that when you say that, I would always say when. The mind is extremely powerful when we think in the future. And in order to maintain that hope, you have to say when we get our daughter back. So anyway, go ahead.
Right. Well, when we get our loved ones back, what if we make contact with our daughter and she has sort of a Stockholm syndrome and claims she doesn't want to leave the situation she's in, that it's her life and this is what she's doing and et cetera, especially
well,
if it's an addiction that's been pushed on her or maintained or that sort of thing. What do we do then? I mean, they are over age, and, you know, how do we get them back and get them treatment that they need?
Well, I mean, that's obviously would be a wonderful scenario to be dealing with, because taking the uncertainty out of the equation all of a sudden changes the parameters of the questions. And you take that uncertainty out, and all of a sudden then you're dealing with a known situation. Well, that is infinitely easier both for loved ones and also for professionals to deal with, because here's our problem. You know, she was kidnapped, and she fell in love with a kidnapper and has embraced the lifestyle, and that's what she wants to live. Well, then we're looking at a whole different set of parameters that we're going to say, okay, now we need to treat that. Obviously, at that point, then you want to have a mental health professional involved. You want to learn all you can about the situation and the scenario. You want to get, you know, just as much info as possible. And then you start working out a plan of, okay, we're going to have to win her back. And we're going to have to do that little by little, because they've had her for X amount of months or years. And clearly they've been to work on her during that period of time. So that would be a slow, gradual process. And, you know, working with a mental health professional, we would come up with a strategy of, okay, this is how you're going to go about doing it.
Okay.
Tanya or Karen, do you have other questions for Dr. Archer?
Nothing right off the top of my head. I pretty much everyone's asked what I wanted to ask, and that is, you know, how do we, when we get her back, how do we proceed? What, you know, especially with now Raven's an adult. She's no longer underage. If she says, you know, this is where I want to be, I'm not, you know, coming home, what can we do? Is there anything at all?
Well, if she's an adult, then obviously you can't make her leave what she's doing. I mean, that's number one. And if she just says, hey, you know, guys, I decided to touch base because I've been gone for a long time. I'm doing fine. And I love it out here, wherever that may be, and this is my life and the life I want to lead, then you start with that and maybe celebrate the fact that, wow, finally, you know, we have contact after all this time. And so you have a brief moment of elation, and then you start realizing, okay, now we have to like, focus on the problem at hand. But I'll tell you with my experience here, I mean, that does happen, but I mean, certainly with the missing person cases that I've been involved with, it's often more likely that they come back because they've rejected the situation they're in. Let's say they're in it and of their own free will. Oftentimes they realize, you know what, I had a lot, heck of a lot better at home than what I'm going through here, and they'll make a break in order to get away. So often that's, I would say the majority of time that a missing person is found, it's more likely that they want to be found and they want to get out of the situation that they're in, as opposed to embracing that situation and wanting to stay. Not saying it doesn't happen, because of course it does, but I think that's not the likelihood, at least based on my experience.
With the three cases, Dr. Archer, sadly, Kayla's family and Cara's family have not heard from their children. Tanya, however, has heard on two occasions, to Tanya once and to Raven's stepmom once. She has phoned in, but the calls that both mothers received were very concerning. They were happy to hear her voice, but in the next breath, it was more like she was forced to call and was being told what to say. And in Raven's case, her vehicle was found not by police, but rather the mother, who got a ticket in the mail and traced it back to an address in Venice, where then she called in the police, and the police were able to sit on the car until she flew down there. But as soon as we did a Fox interview, which I'm going to play shortly, that interview sparked a tip from a concerned parent of another child. And it has led us to believe that Raven and Cara, we've always felt that there was a trafficking issue, and definitely with Kayla, we know that her family believes that trafficking's been involved. If all three girls are being trafficked and we're dealing in organized crime, and now all three girls are over 18 years of age, how do you keep that momentum up with looking for your child, like Tanya stated, not knowing if you're going to do more harm than good by putting their pictures out there?
Well, you know, yeah, like I said, I don't think you're doing more harm than good, but there's no studies, definitive or otherwise, out there that says that this is the case. Again, you just have to go by your gut feeling. And mine is that the more you put it out there, the greater likelihood that you're going to get some positive response that helps you lead to a resolution. The thing about organized crime and the human trafficking is that we're gradually starting to shine a brighter and brighter light on that underbelly of society, and the fact that this is so prevalent in America, where we always used to think that, oh, is this something that happened over in Russia and Asia and Eastern Europe? Well, it's very prevalent right here in America, and estimated 200,000 kids a year go missing due to some aspect of that.
And a lot of them are kept within the country, and of course, a lot of them are addicted to drugs and turned into prostitutes. I mean, but the thing about the organized crime aspect of things is that it's one thing to traffic someone and to kidnap them and turn them into a prostitute, but it's another thing to kill them. So, you know, it's not something that, based on the cases I'm involved with, where they were, if the heat starts getting too high, it's a lot easier for them just to let the person go and not be involved with it, and then to have to deal with taking some other type of action. And again, you know, this is such a tough topic because of the fact that we don't know, you know, like so many things in mental health now, we have a study we can point out and say, all right, this study says this is what you need to do. And we don't have that here. But I just feel that being active and pushing law enforcement through any means you have is going to be the best therapy for you, and also yield the greatest likelihood of being able to find out what happened. As you said, the Fox interview led to a tip, which led to the – so, I mean, yeah, that's – any news at this point having to do with the person being – somewhere and alive is good news. And so,
Dr. Archer, this is Shelley Schaefer. Why do you think, just in your opinion, that law enforcement is so against the media and so against the parents going to the media? Do you have an opinion on that? Why they would be so furious at
well,
some of the parents?
Yeah, but you know, I mean, law enforcement has always looked at the media as the devil. And so, I mean, they're trying to fight crime and do their job, and the media comes along and just exposes, you know, what they're doing, and they look at them as just parasites that are reporting for the sake of reporting and ratings, and they're doing the dirty work. And so there's always been an uneasy relationship between law enforcement and any type of media. I mean, every police officer I know can't stand to talk to a reporter. They don't want anything to do with them. They just look at them as muddy in the water, getting in their way, you know, profiting on the misfortune of someone else, and so they don't have a lot of use for them. So I think it's an ingrained in their culture that they reject the media right off the bat, you know?
Right.
And so you throw in this type of high emotion crime, where the family is distraught and the relatives are distraught and they're all screaming for action, do something, do something, do something, then they just look at it as one more distraction, which they don't need. You know,
right.
But again, I have to disagree with that. I have to say that it's the type of situation where you want all the information out there that you can get and let them sift through it and see if any of that is valid. And, of course, it's more work for them as well. So
I agree with you. I think that media should be brought in and the faces of these women should be shown and facts of the case. And the police, unfortunately, they may have more work, but we may also find more missing children and women.
Absolutely.
I agree with that. Absolutely. For our listeners out there, the chat room is open. Log on to blogtalkradio.com/helpingheroes and just click chat. Or if you'd like to call in, we have a couple minutes left with Dr. Archer. He'll take your call. The number is 917-932-8962 if you have a question for Dr. Archer. Do any of the guests on the line right now have any other questions? I know I keep calling it an emotional roller coaster because I've been doing this for about 5 years with Shelley and also our partner, Kathy Johnston, out in Alabama, and we go through emotions. It's hard for us to turn it off. And these aren't even our kids. So do you have any questions either from yourself or your other loved ones, the siblings of these missing girls, other parents, et cetera, that Dr. Archer could answer for you while we have him on the line?
I do. We were told very, very early in the investigation that our daughter was likely to be deceased. In fact, they turned the case immediately to a homicide detective. And it never made a whole lot of sense to us, but it's been extremely hard, as you call it, the emotional roller coaster, to go from trying to grieve, but then, well, no, that's not an appropriate emotional reaction. We've got to, you know, there might be hope or this or that, or, you know, every twist and turn in the case. And it really leaves me not knowing where to be emotionally. And I really don't understand why this case was already seeming so hopeless to investigators, even if it's not.
Well, that's curious. Did they have any evidence to lead to them to believe it was a homicide? That's, I mean, yeah, usually you don't see that.
No, they didn't. It was just the fact that it was an abrupt departure and all communication stopped, where she had been very active on social media and on her cell phone, et cetera, and she had an addiction, and they made a lot of assumptions regarding that.
Because, you know, typically a missing person is statistically not a homicide. So, I mean, if you have nothing else to go on and they just disappear or would, you know, stop the social media and drop out of sight, statistically, they're still alive. And so
right,
you proceed as a missing persons case, not as a homicide. So I'm surprised by that. I don't can't imagine why they would label it such.
Well, they labeled it a suicide at one point, too. And
yeah,
when we came on to it, we came on to Cara's case a month later. A reporter, who's a friend of the family's, had them call us. And so when we got involved, the first thing Julia was saying to us is the police think she killed herself. And I said, Julia, when was the last time you saw a news report about a suicide where the person hid their own body? you just don't hear about that. So then in the next breath, we think she's dead. And it's like, what evidence do you have to show anything at this point? And so it is an emotional roller coaster because you're hitting...
I know. I mean, I'll speak to the suicide. It's extremely rare to have a suicide without some type of message or note or, you know, by and large, there's some type of contact. And not only that, suicide, the overwhelming majority of people that commit it have spoken about it within the last 30 days. They'll bring it up, and they bring it up to you know, friends, family, somebody. They would say, no, things are so bad, I'm going to kill myself. So have none of that going on, no voice of suicidal ideation within the past month or two, and then no note, no contact, no body, makes suicide, in my mind, a virtual impossibility. I mean, it's just not impossible, but it's way, way down there in terms of the statistical possibility in a case like this. You know,
and find, Dr. Archer, that many people, especially teenage girls, would leave their home and leave everything behind? You know, I can see somebody that, you know, owes the IRS or is on a tax lien or something like that, trying to break free and leave their life. But a child, a teenage girl, leaving their home, leaving their computer behind, money behind. Cara left $271 behind, all their makeup, their clothing, all of that, with the intention of never coming home.
No, that's you're right. So, you know, when you look at the statistical list as we go through this, well, then, I mean, every case is different, and then depending on the characteristics of each case, and then you kind of put a profile together of, okay, what would have taken place. But by and large, when someone's running away, then again, there's evidence of it. You know, they take the money, they take their makeup, they take a few things with them, they load a backpack, and then they leave.
They have
so
online activity.
What's that?
And they would have online activity. None of these girls have been seen or heard from, except Raven on two occasions. No online activity, no cell phone usage, no emailing. No one's heard or seen from them.
Yeah. So again, you know, there's typically a preparation that would go into that, and then there's evidence that they took stuff with them that, that's very meaningful. And, of course, cash would be the number one thing that you would take, because if you're going to start a new life somewhere, you, you need all the money you can get. So, you know, so then we would throw that out. And then, you know, you, in such a case where you really have no evidence of suicidal ideation, you have no evidence of pre-planning or taking anything along with you, then you're down to an accidental death, say, if, you know, they're abusing drugs and possibly an overdose, but you almost always find a body. So you take that out of the equation, really you're left with the most logical being an abduction. I mean, that by definition, if you eliminate statistically the way these other events transpire, suicide, running away, overdose, and none of those have any evidence whatsoever pointing to them, then abduction becomes the most likely. So I think, you know, we look at these cases individually, and you look for the evidence that something is pointing to one of these other factors. But when you don't find anything and just a rapid, abrupt disappearance between point A and point B at between this time and that time, then that becomes the most likely.
I totally agree with you. Does anybody have any other questions? I know that we've gone over. Dr. Archer has another commitment on the hour, so we appreciate your time, Dr. Archer. Tanya, do you have any last questions for the doctor?
No.
How about you, Karen?
No, thank you.
Okay. And Julia?
No, thanks a lot, though.
Thank you, Dr. Archer.
Okay. I want to
thank you, Dr. Archer.
I want to wish all of you ladies the best. And again, the only thing I can tell you is that you have to maintain hope and keep pushing and keep doing everything you can. And I wish you the best.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Dr. Archer.
And Michelle, thank you so much for having me. Always a pleasure.
Always. Thank you.
Okay. Yep.
Michelle?
Okay, what we're going to... Yeah, Shelley?
This is Shelley Schaefer. I'd like to hear some of the parents' stories on what they've gone through since their loved one had been missing. Did it start with a missing report made to the police and where it... I mean, we obviously know where it's ended up now with their loved one still missing, but I would like if they would like to share, obviously... if they're willing to share their experience with how did the investigation, or if there is still an investigation going on.
Well, let's start with Karen. Again, Kayla Croft Payne, you can learn more about this case, KaylaCroftPayne.org, went missing from Chehalis, Washington, April 28th, 2010. At the time, she was 18 years of age. She's female, 5'8", 124 pounds, Caucasian, blue eyes, brown hair. And she was and is still, once you're listed with the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, you will always remain with them despite your age. Her case number with NCMEC is 116-1960. If you have any information on her whereabouts, you can send tips to any three of these cases to tips@nwcave.org. Or you can, on Kayla's case, call 1-800-THE-LOSS. Karen, would you like to respond to Dr. Schaefer?
I'm not sure where you want me to start. With Kayla, it's been going on for so long, and it's reset itself several times, just because we went through numerous detectives and different leads, and we also had to encounter the problem of people showing up to the investigation, you know, attaching themselves to it, and taking us in the wrong direction on purpose. So we had plenty of setbacks to start with. One of the things Julia had kind of talked about with one of the detectives and the way they view the missing person as deceased already, we dealt with that for about a year and a half, and finally I had to tell one of the detectives, until you have an actual body, you need to at least consider the possibility that she's still alive.
you're not allowed to just dismiss her as a body.
Mm-hmm.
And that kept them, I don't want to say on their toes, but that let them know that we're not just looking for a homicide or a suicide. We're still looking for a person that's alive and breathing. And sometimes everybody involved needs to be reminded of that.
And it's kind of like what Dr. Archer said. We have to have the hope. And I personally, through my investigations with the Missing Person Division, believe that these three young women are alive. And there's been some sightings. There's been lots of tips coming in. And hopefully this show will bring more tips in. And I don't think anybody, I mean, I can't imagine the pain that you three are going through, but I think that your hope of them being alive is very, it's accurate from everything that I've read. So keep that hope, and we hope to bring them home soon.
And with Kayla, for our listeners, Karen, when we got on to Cara's case, Cara, who's been missing since October of last year from Colorado Springs, we were approached by Karen asking if we had ever heard of this modeling website, and I had never heard of it at that point. And so I know that Kayla did post on her Facebook wall back in 2010 that she was going on a modeling shoot interview with a photographer and had never been seen or heard from again. And we believe, which the site's been taken down, but she had a profile on the modeling site in question. Is that correct, Karen?
That's correct. Shortly after she went missing, it has disappeared. I was told by a detective that they had it taken down. And now they're searching for it with a warrant so they can get into her messages.
We do also know that Raven Furlong went on a photo shoot and did come home. However, that photo shoot from that individual, he is a member of Model Mayhem. So she did come home, but then things became worse, if we can use that word, and she did go missing. But that first photo shoot was done by an individual through my investigation that has a connection through Model Mayhem. So I think
yes.
Kara Nichols, Julia, she had a site with Model Mayhem as well?
Yes, she did.
So it's obvious to everybody that's listening and to us that the common denominator is Model Mayhem. And
one thing, Shelley, I'd like to have one thing with all of that is that when Raven did have her photographs taken, she was underage and nobody signed a consent form.
Correct.
And we were fortunate enough to be able to get into her messages and read some of her messages, and some of these photographers were asking her underage if she would do nude photographs after they asked how old she was. And so the people that are on that site are just, they're just trolling. They're just not professionals.
Right. This is, they may be the human trafficking, one of the human trafficking parts that's happening in the United States today. They do have an F rating with the Better Business Bureau, and that...
And we're only stating the facts that we know, although we've partnered with our friends over at All We Want Is Love organization and survivor of human trafficking from that site, Jillian Morning. We have partnered, but these are just the common denominators. And, of course, we're not putting blame on anyone in particular. We're just stating the facts that this particular site has been sued, is being sued, has an F rating, and there are numerous people that have had a profile on that site that have either gone missing, ended up murdered, have been raped, like Jillian, and then in the next breath, blackmailed and trafficked for 6 months before she was rescued. So there's just too many common denominators to ignore. Do we know for a fact that they're involved indirectly? No, we don't. And under Shelley's direction, NW Cave has established a task force, and we are in the process of doing an independent investigation into those common links, common denominators, because we believe that higher authority need to take it,
they need to have accountability for their actions.
Accountability.
And inactions. Julia, could you tell us a little bit about Kara's case and what occurred with the investigation, if the investigation went cold, if they considered her a runaway, or can you shed some light on us?
They never considered her a runaway, and they took it seriously that she went missing under very suspicious and alarming circumstances, like the abrupt end of communication, the fact that her belongings were left in her room. It just didn't make any sense that, she would have been deliberately leaving. And that was never a problem that they considered her a runaway. So they did designate a case, which was fortunate for us. However, I think because their assumption initially was that she had met with foul play and that she likely was dead, I think that might have colored the direction that the investigation went in and sort of slowed things down a little bit until some more media exposure was given, some more pushing for that sort of thing, and then tips started coming in. But even so, there was a lot of so-called issues like, oh, we have far too many tips, it'll take us so long, we have, way too many homicides going on in the Springs, so we have to deal with that as a priority rather than work on your daughter's case. So after the tips started drying up a little bit, it was as if the case went cold. And for several weeks, no action was taken, a lot of justifications for the lack of action, and et cetera, until finally, at one point, About two months ago, the case went to a different detective because the first detective voluntarily wanted to be positioned somewhere else in the force. And with this new detective, it took a while to get up to speed. She's extremely conscientious, but there's still, we hear a lot of talk about how limited their sheriff's department is, how they don't have resources. They're limited to working with things in El Paso County, they can't go further than El Paso County, et cetera, et cetera. So we often feel like when we bring a possibility to them, it's dampened down a little bit, that, oh, no, we only can deal with the exact facts and it has to be county-related and we just don't have the resources to do this or that or chase after this or that. So we really believe that the media exposure is key to finding our daughter, because if she is not in El Paso County, how else would we find her?
I agree.
And with
that,
I'd like to play a soundbite. When we first came on to Kara's case, it was over a month that she had gone missing. And keeping in mind, she went missing. She left on her own. All three girls left on their own, which I think tends to come back and bite them, because it's like, well, they left on their own, they were fine, which we'll hear from Tanya in a few minutes regarding Raven's case. But I'd like to play a soundbite, because the folks over at HLN, and I have to say, on all three of these cases, we're getting up to speed with Kayla's case, but with Kara and Raven, we have not had a bad experience with the media that we have been being selective in doing. We have appreciated all the networks, and I want to put that out there, because at times you don't want to re-exploit a missing child, let alone a teenager who, in like Raven's case, we did a soft push locally in hopes to bring her out to call home, which she did, which obviously the outcome wasn't what we had hoped. But with Cara, we haven't heard from her. And the folks at HLN and Jane Velez Mitchell, which is a huge advocate on the war on women and girls, she got Cara's case right on there. We came on board. We recommended to the family that we do a joint press conference with the police, which the day after this aired, the police did a press conference, and then the family also joined. But I'm going to play something for just a minute and hear about Cara's case on HLN from November of last year.
Where is Cara? She's been missing for more than a month now. There was the call from her mobile phone just before midnight. Then nothing. She has blonde hair and green eyes.
Tonight, the clock is ticking for a family desperate for clues in the mysterious disappearance of their beautiful 19-year-old daughter. Cara Nichols, there she is in various photos, was last heard from a month and a half ago when she made a call from her cell phone just before midnight. That is the last trace of this aspiring model. Her mother and father believe she was on her way to Denver for a potential modeling job. The cops call her disappearance suspicious because she has had no contact with family or friends. What are the secrets of this case that might help us find Cara? Straight out to Michelle Bart, president and co-founder of the National Women's Coalition Against Violence and Exploitation. Michelle, I know you're working very closely with this frantic family. We all want to find Cara. I'm perplexed. This beautiful young woman has been missing for more than a month, and yet doing research all day, we can't find basic information. We don't know if she was driving a car, let alone what kind of car. So what do we know, Michelle?
Again, that was just part of a soundbite. The next day, both Julia and her husband also were on HLN, and I would have to agree. I think no one, when we came on board, knew Cara was even missing. And still, correct me if I'm wrong, Julia, you recently went out with a couple other parents and friends in the Colorado Springs area about a month ago, and so many people said, oh, she's missing? Oh, I didn't know we had anybody missing.
We had some of that reaction when we did that, and it was really sad and frustrating to me because we were told early on in the investigation, oh, don't put flyers out. That'll just hold up the investigation, and it won't do any good anyway. And they were very discouraging of that kind of activity, which, again, reinforces the fact that they made a lot of assumptions initially.
Definitely, definitely. And again, if you have any questions for any of these families today, feel free and call in. The call-in number is 917-932-8962. We're also in the chat room. Log on to blogtalkradio.com/helpingheroes. If you have any information on the whereabouts or any information on what has happened to Cara Nichols, you can send your tips to tips@nwcave.org, or you can also email them to Detective Tammy, what's her last name?
Gugliotta.
At findcaranichols@gmail.com, or you can call the switchboard at the El Paso County Sheriff's Office at 719-390-5555. The circumstances, again, for Cara Nichols, she went missing at the age of 19 on October 9th, 2012. She left her home in the vicinity of the 6700 block of Mission Road in Colorado Springs, told her roommate she was heading to Denver for a gig modeling job, and was never seen or heard from again. The last call on her cell phone supposedly was pinged at 11:45 p.m., Cara has gauged ears, which could stand out. She also has piercings in her upper lip and navel. She's 19, 5'8", 120 pounds.
I would say she's a little shorter than that, Michelle. I'm sorry.
Oh, that's right. I think we discussed that. About 5'5".
About 120 pounds,
Caucasian, green eyes, bleach blonde hair, sometimes with streaks of red in them. She has a small tattoo of a spaceman on her left wrist and small tattoo of a leaf on her left ankle. If you have any information, the case number is 12-12983, and you can learn more about Kara, again, at karanichols.org. You know, it's ironic that all three of these cases are somewhat, you know, the common denominator is all three girls had a model mayhem profile, but they're also how they all came to us, because we were working with the family of Kara Nichols, the aunt, Toby of Raven, found us. And that's when Shelley and her team said, we'll take on this case and try to have a voice for Raven. But what we did differently with Raven's case was a soft approach, because we knew Raven left with two other girls. Their names are Alyssa and Olivia, possibly going by Ollie, O-L-I, Redden, from the Aurora, Colorado area. All three girls supposedly had left together, were seen on February 5th, 2013, at a pawn shop where the two girls, not Raven, but the other two girls, had pawned guitars and made about $1,000 from what we've been told, continued going wherever they were going, and Raven got a speeding ticket in Utah. All of this information had not been looked into or given to the family, actually, until a fast, you know, an approach from the family began. We did a soft approach, which meant we went through all of her friends on Facebook and started emailing them that she was missing, and that Olivia Redden could possibly be brought up on charges of kidnapping an underage teenager. We asked whoever knows where Raven is to have her phone her family immediately. We did an interview or two locally, but then nothing happened until 5 minutes before the deadline that we had given her. And at that time, she phoned her stepmom. And we were ready to come off the case at that time. But
Michelle,
the stepmom, go ahead.
Can we hear from Tanya and her experience with the investigation that's going on with Raven?
Definitely, definitely. Again, Raven Cassidy Furlong. For more information, go to ravenfurlong.org, missing since February 5th, 2013. And Tanya is on the line. Tanya is Raven's mother.
Yes, basically from day one, I had gotten a text from my daughter basically telling me she was leaving with Alyssa and Olivia for a few days, that she wasn't running away, she just wanted to get away from stress. And I texted back that just was not acceptable. She didn't come home that evening, and so I made a report the very next day. And the reporting officer said, in my experience, when the kids get cold and tired and hungry, they'll come home. And that was pretty much where it sat for a few weeks until my sister, I called my sister. I was at a loss. I had gone through emails and Facebook and everything, and I was just at a loss, and I asked my sister for help. And that's when she found NW Cave, and we started with, you know, the first, let's get her to call, and the call was panicked. It was not right. And so when we alerted the officers to that, it was not taken seriously at all. It was just, she's a runaway, you know, she's under 18, she's a runaway. And as things progressed and we started getting tips and we started getting information and we started doing media and we started kind of taking the investigation into our own hands, the more information we got, I kept passing it along to the officers, and that nothing was really done. And at some point, you know, the frustration that you feel when you're when you have information, you give it to the police, and then nothing happens is so overwhelming. And so, and the time, I mean, the days, they all just, they still just blend together. It hasn't quite been 2 months, and it's been very, you know, as you know, my husband and I flew out on a moment's notice to Venice, California, in hopes that the location of the car would lead us to my daughter, which sadly it did not. And again, what we keep getting from Aurora Police is, well, when she left Aurora, she was a runaway. We can't handle anything that's not happening in our jurisdiction. But when we're in LAPD, LAPD tells us that anything, any information tips that we have to come to them through Aurora. But I call them into Aurora, and Aurora says we can't act on anything because that's not our jurisdiction. And I don't understand why LAPD can't independently investigate anything, and I certainly don't understand why Aurora will only consider her a runaway with all of the evidence that we have that points to the fact that she's not. And so I just, you know, I'm at a loss because I feel like we're just getting tossed back and forth, and that adds to that emotional roller coaster, as you say. And so it's like we're so close and yet we're so far, and
I'd like to
down.
I'd like to play the soundbite from Fox Los Angeles. Tanya did an interview because she followed a lead of a parking ticket to the vehicle of hers in Venice, California, flew out there, she and her husband, like she just stated, and we made the executive decision that doing the media right now would be a good thing, and I believe, and so does Shelley, that thanks to Fox Los Angeles, it did spark more information than anyone could have imagined. So we're going to play the soundbite again from March in 2013 that took place on KPTV out of Los Angeles, Fox.
A missing Colorado teen and the California modeling website. Is there a connection? The 17-year-old drove away from her home in Aurora, Colorado. Her car turned up here, and now her desperate mother is talking first to Fox 11. Susan Hirsuna with the story. Susan.
February 5th, that's when she was last seen. 17-year-old Raven Furlong, she packed some clothes and makeup. She sent one text message that day, promised to return. That was weeks ago now. In the family search for Raven, they discovered she had a profile on modelmayhem.com. That's the same website connected to two other missing females.
My greatest concern, a lot of those people on there, they're not professional photographers. They don't pay you. They don't ask if you have a portfolio. They want you to provide them photographs for their portfolio and do it free of charge, and they'll give you photographs. So it's not even like a fee-based situation.
Well, I called Model Mayhem's parent company in El Segundo, but got no response. Raven's mom can't say for sure if the website has anything to do with her disappearance or just put some wild thoughts in her head. Meantime, she's hopeful now that they've recovered her car, that maybe they're a step closer to finding her. She and Raven's stepfather spent the day watching the car, then talking to everyone in Venice, showing them this picture. They're also looking for this girl, Alyssa Redden. She and Raven left Colorado together. Alyssa has been in contact with her family but hasn't been forthcoming about Raven's whereabouts, and now her mom is left thinking the worst.
Half of runaways who hit the streets within 48 hours are picked up by a pimp or some sort of person who will traffic them. And so it is definitely a concern of mine because she's been gone for 6 weeks now. She's had no contact with her family. She's, even though there's traces, there's the car here, there's a ticket here, there's been no evidence of Raven.
LAPD found the car thanks to a number of parking tickets from different locations around Venice. Adding to the mystery, Raven's glasses and jewelry still inside, but also a man's hat and shoes and hot dogs, a food Raven never ate. So, take another look at Raven Furlong. Her family insists she had no reason to run away and every reason to be home in Aurora. And here's some incentive for you. There is a $1,000 reward for information leading to her safe return home to Colorado. And if you have a tip for the family, you'll find contact information for them on our website, myfoxla.com.
A missing Colorado teen and the...
Before we go to you, Tanya, I know that Karen needs to leave. So, Karen, any last thoughts before we part ways tonight?
You have to stay on top of everything. Like me personally, for emotional, I just kind of went to a holding pattern. It's not negative or positive. It's just, I'm just there, ready, you know, kind of ready to take on the information as it comes to me. That way I can just deal with it accordingly. When it comes
Karen, we stand behind you 100%, and we will do everything in our power to bring Kayla home.
Thank you.
Karen, one last thought also. The recent media hits in regards to the common denominator with the three girls, didn't that spark a new investigator on Kayla's case also?
Yes. We're working with a new detective, and he seemed very interested in following all the leads. So many times we had turned in leads, and they just weren't interested. Or it was, you know, they considered it hearsay. Well, when I have an email from a girl that states that she was there when Kayla was taken, I don't consider it hearsay. I consider it somebody you need to talk to. And
mm-hmm.
That's the way this new detective is viewing things.
And that's
so
good.
Hopefully something good will come out of all of the attention that's coming. And I know that a couple of your families will be doing some more media in the coming weeks. And so let's hope and pray it leads us to Kayla. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Karen.
And again, KaylaCroftPayne.org if you want information on her niece. Thanks again, Karen.
Keep the hope.
Thank you. Thank you.
So, Tanya, back to you. I'm sorry to interrupt there.
No problem.
That news release, that soundbite came from Fox in Los Angeles, right?
Yeah.
On the night that you found your vehicle. It did spark, without naming names, did spark many tips that came into us because they weren't being answered by other agencies that people were calling. And didn't one of those tips actually help spark more interest of authorities?
Absolutely, it did. We got a tip from a young lady who was a lady who had seen my daughter, but she was also a victim and survivor of a drug trafficking ring. She had actually not even been out of there for a week, and she was able to positively identify my daughter as someone who was there. Along with that, she had some street names of the people who were holding the girls.
Without naming.
No names. And I had legal paperwork in my car that belonged to a male, the same male that's clothing and shoes were found in there. And with that name, we were able to send her a photo and get a positive identification with a street name. And that's how we actually found the booking photo of my daughter from March 10th. Was because she was arrested with that person under a different name. She was booked into LAPD and essentially released without her identity being verified in any way, shape, or form. Again, very disheartening to know that the tips that have come in and the fact that she slipped through their fingers on several occasions, the car had received several tickets despite being reported being attached to a missing...
Throughout the state of California, correct?
Five so far, plus a fast-track violation, so six total.
Is that including Utah?
No, that is not including Utah. All forgiveness to Utah, being as my daughter was not yet reported as a runaway, the car was not yet reported stolen when the vehicle was pulled over there. So five or six times my plate was scanned in California and it never came up, or they never read that it was reported stolen or attached to a missing runaway. And then she was booked in and released without verifying identity. And so, that was very disheartening because these are the people you trust to serve and protect and help and look out for your child. This was weeks after you had sent over Raven's flyer and her NCMEC photos and to that particular department and said, we have reason to believe she may be in this area and to please keep an eye out. And so they had these flyers for weeks, and yet she was arrested and released. And that was just crushing.
And Julia, I would like to just, if I could just interject here a moment, the same eyewitness that Tanya's speaking of does believe that she has seen Kara out there as well. So
yes.
I just wanted to make sure that you knew
how
that.
How do you feel about that, Kara? I mean, how do you feel about that, Julia, that someone may have seen your daughter also, and yet we have nothing to go on as to finding out if it's accurate or not?
I feel very frustrated, and I want to push forward and somehow get this information documented or given to the FBI, but it just seems like it's hard to do that. You know, various reasons why, but I spoke to the family also, and although, you know, your mind doesn't want to leap to conclusions and hope against all hope, a lot of the things that were said in our conversation did really resonate, that this sighting could really be Kara, you know? And so it's frustrating to me, you know, what do we do next? What do we...
And who do you
go
to?
Right, where do we go with this information?
And even taking that information and taking that witness directly down to the FBI and speaking with the person who works with crimes against children, you know, he took all of our information, and again, it was a handshake and a we'll be in touch. And what I got when it was we'll be in touch was, well, we've offered our assistance to the LAPD. We've offered our assistance to Aurora, but they have to request it. And again, Aurora just considers her a runaway, and LAPD, the same thing. I mean, what you get from everybody in LA is this is a place people go to disappear. She's voluntarily gone. And it's almost like there's a whole community that supports that. There's organizations that provide, you know, toiletries and clothing and food to all these people who are out there. And so you have a whole community that just supports that. And, you know, flying out there, finding one person, and honestly, I don't know how many people are in L.A., but obviously millions, finding one person in a city of millions when it's just the two of us walking the streets looking is almost impossible. You know, we did have the car. We hoped we would be able to, she would come back to the vehicle and we would be able to find her that way, which, you know, did not happen, but it's so frustrating. You can go to, as Michelle knows, I have spoken with, I think, every department possible between NCMEC, you know, the FBI, Aurora, LA, the Department of Justice, NCIC, and I'm even getting told from the Aurora detective that in 38 years he's never seen someone so tenacious, and I said, well, what would you do if it was your kid? And I'm only this tenacious because I know she's not voluntarily gone, but then in the next breath he says, we still just consider her a runaway, and we can't investigate anything happening in L.A.
Well, my position, what I've learned in the last 5 years working with families of missing children, running away is not a crime. Being lured away is. And I truly believe that these three girls, although they left on their own, based on the evidence that they left everything behind, shows me that they had planned on coming back. But being lured away with the hopes and grandeur of being the next runway model, I believe that they believe that Los Angeles is the place, you know, the place to be. And sadly, you know, they did leave on their own. Sadly, you know, they had the activity online that they had, but they still deserve to be looked for. And, you know, in Raven's case, that Fox report also was heartbreaking for this tipster and his girlfriend that led the San Bernardino Sheriff's Office, which we say kudos to them because they followed a lead. They believe, too, that the sighting could have been Raven. They did everything in their power, and when they weren't getting responses back from the authorities, they called us. And I have to just give a shout-out to the PIO and the folks over at the San Bernardino Sheriff's Office because they followed that lead to the very end, and although it wasn't Raven, you know, They made sure that that tip did not fall through the cracks, and I credit them.
And I'd also, if he's listening, give a shout out to Ben, who followed through and continued to call and continue to follow up. So if he is listening, we do appreciate everything you have done, Ben.
Definitely. And his girlfriend, they just great. He went as far as posting comments all over Facebook telling people his experience. And in the end, his voice was heard. So he's definitely an ally for Voices for Justice. But with Raven, you have heard from her. So how does that make you feel, Tanya, to know that she's still out there somewhere, but based on your last conversation with her a couple weeks ago, what makes you think she's not okay?
Well, at first there was overwhelming relief to hear her voice, and there was actually disbelief at first. I was just in shock. But then the conversation was very strange. You know, we had a very large presence while we were out there in L.A., and she said, you know, I'm fine, I'm safe, you know, I'm not calling from my phone, I can't stay on the phone forever. And I said, you know, you need to talk to me, just give me a minute. And she said, you know, I'll meet you somewhere. And I said, okay, well, where do you want me to meet you? Tell me when and where. And she said, well, I can meet you anywhere. I said, well, I'm not in California anymore, Raven. She says, well, I can meet you halfway. I can meet you in Arizona. And I said, tell me when and where. She said, I'll call you back with that. And she hung up. And then when she did call back, she just says, you know, I can't meet you. I can't go to Arizona. I can't meet you. And so it definitely felt like it was a fishing trip to see if I was still in L.A., if the heat was still on, if there was still, you know, the fire, you know, because I'm just not willing to stop looking for my daughter. I know she's out there. I have this, like I said, there was overwhelming relief. There was disbelief, but then I was very saddened because the calls weren't normal. The things she said didn't make sense. And I can't even explain it. Like you said, it's an emotional roller coaster, you know. In one night, you can be elated and then bawling your eyes out, and it's just so hard to, you know, go to sleep, get up, go to work. And as Julia had said, you know, make this life my new normal. You know, that's a very difficult thing to do. And just emotionally, I can't even describe it.
And I think Dr. Archer was right on target where he said the media still needs to be involved. The police don't like that. That's unfortunate. Resources in some areas are slim, but we have missing teens and young women, and we need to find them. So we need to keep their pictures out there. We need to keep doing media, and maybe, you know, in some cases, as Karen has a new investigator, Julia has a new investigator, maybe something will change. I've tried to find out jurisdiction rules, and I was sent a not very nice email back from the police.
How does that make you feel, Shelley? I know that you head up our missing persons division, but you used to work in law enforcement for, what, 26, 27 years, and Aurora Police happened to be one of the places you worked for. How does this particular case, how does it hit you?
I am from Aurora, Colorado, and I work for the Aurora Police Department, and to me it's just a disgrace to just write a child off as a runaway when we have other facts. It's a disgrace. And to have a family go through what these families are going through, I can't even fathom it. I've never worked anything where a family has been just so blown off, if you will use that term. It's a disgrace, and it's very heartbreaking that I even have to admit that I worked for that police department at this time.
Well, with Raven's case, I mean, what startles me is all missing kids cases, families wish they had other things to go on. In Raven's case, how much more evidence could one have? I mean, you have all of her online activities and passwords, and you have her phone logs, and you have her computer, and the car. The car was never even processed. You had a used, what was it, a condom or something? So you had so much stuff, and none of that was processed by the authorities. We could process it. The parents could process it. But what do we do with the evidence after we process it?
And as
you
soon
know,
as we touch it, we break the chain of command, and it couldn't be used as evidence anyways.
Right, the
That's
chain of
right.
custody. The chain of custody would be broken, and it would not be able to be used. And why they're not doing their job, as Tanya said, they're there to serve and to protect. I don't think we're getting service. I think we're getting injustice.
And with Cara's case, it's pretty much the same way. I mean, when we did the press conference with the Sheriff's Department there in Colorado Springs, they released a brunette. You know, that's what always got me, Julia, was they released to the media a brunette that they were looking for. Within 5 seconds, we had dozens of people emailing us and posting even on the wall that this is who you're looking for. This is so if the people could see that photo and say who they were looking for, I always wondered why was it that the police couldn't find that girl?
And
yeah, not only that, wasn't there a tip that was ignored for weeks, if not months?
And
yes.
hair color can change, but the face doesn't change. And a mother would always know the face of their child.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, Julia, how do you, I mean, what do you, you know, what do you make of, you know, the person of interest that the police came out with in November trying to look for when all along, It took no matter than 5 seconds once it aired that people said, oh, this is who you're looking for.
Well, I wonder if they, what might have happened if they had spoken to this person of interest immediately. And then I also wonder, now, they say they thoroughly interviewed this person and then released her, and she didn't give any information that really told them what happened to Cara. But I just do wonder about that because maybe she knows more and she's not willing to say. They tell me they can't exactly interrogate people, but I wonder why not.
Yeah, why not, Shelley?
Right, you know, and then they'll tell me, well, these people if we had them in a room for 36 hours, we still sometimes can't get anything out of this type of person. They would just tell me all sorts of roadblocks, and to me that just didn't seem very acceptable because a lot of us in other careers and walks of life can't just make excuses like that. We have to get the job done or we're fired.
So, interrogations are usually used for criminal suspects and interviews are used for just a witness. If she's scared or for some reason, I mean, there's ways to get information from her during an interview. Whether those ways were used or whether those techniques were used, there's several techniques for interviewing witnesses, whether they were used or not, I don't know. I understand your frustrations, and I'm doing the best I can. I just want you to know that a day doesn't go by that I don't think of all of the missing cases that we are working on, and a day doesn't go by that we're investigating a lead or two leads. And I believe someone posted on our chat room that they were looking into some things in Aurora, Colorado right now. So we have other people that are out there looking, and the media is key, and I think more media is going to come. And don't give up your hope, because I believe our eyewitness, unfortunately, she's gone through a very traumatic situation, and we've been told they do drug the women. Now, it was there was question to Dr. Archer what happens when you get them back, and it is when you get them back, because I believe you will, and I believe we'll find other missing girls when we find Raven and Kara as well. Our therapy and drug rehab if they need it, and don't let them out of your sight. Have somebody constantly watching them. But, you know, we're with you 100%, and I hope you realize that. And
for a couple of the people listening to the show that may not be in the chat room, again, the call-in number, we only have a few more minutes, 917-932-8962 if you have a question for anyone of our guests this evening. But I wanted to also give a shout-out to another great organization that we haven't worked much with until recently, Cast LA. If you visit castla.org, a great organization. We referred another family to them today. And, you know, sadly, with human trafficking in particular, we don't have enough programs and services within this country in order to get the help that that these victims need when they do come home. You can put them in certain places, but shelters are a must. We don't have them. But there are great organizations that work for the betterment of inpatient and outpatient care, legal services, mental services, et cetera. And CAST is one of them. And again, their website is castla.org. I had mentioned also Jillian Morning. We've been working with her on our task force regarding seeing the connection with modeling sites and such. She is a survivor of an individual from Model Mayhem, where she was trafficked for 6 months and was finally able to be rescued. She started a nonprofit organization out east, and you can find out more about Jillian Morning at allwewantislove.org. But the one national hotline that we utilize a lot for human trafficking, our partnership with PolarisProject.org, their phone number is 888-3737-888. I also wanted to mention from April 1st through June 15th, the Take 25 campaign that we're a big part of with the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. It only takes 25 minutes, folks, to have that conversation and communication, that open communication and dialogue with your children each and every day. 25 minutes. Talk with your kids. Visit take25.org to learn more. There's great material there for parents, educators, first responders, etc., to learn how to take 25 minutes because it's so important. And lastly, on our organization, I want to just get it out there because Karen, Kayla's aunt, mentioned in the beginning they had issues and ran into roadblocks with people that embedded themselves into finding Kayla that had hidden agendas. Sadly, this is a common thing amongst many families. N.W. Cave, the National Women's Coalition Against Violence and Exploitation, we are a nonprofit organization in Washington State. Our advisory council, they're 25 strong, from prosecutors to defense attorneys to forensic scientists to reporters, you name it, they're on there. These are dedicated individuals. We're known for the Jane Velez Mitchell Journalism Award that will be coming out, where we honor media and reporters making a difference on the war on women. And so we are a nonprofit organization, and we don't embed ourselves. We're asked on board for families that need help. And so with this said, I know that the families, especially with Raven, there were some questions and comments regarding fundraising, we will always frown upon unless the child is under the age of 13 years of age and you need a promotional packet to get going with T-shirts and buttons and such. But when you're dealing with a teenager, and in particular these three cases, fundraising, we always try to frown upon that. And if the families decide that fundraising is a need, which in like Raven's case in particular is at this point, because there's travel involved, because we believe Raven, without a doubt, is in California somewhere. So with the parents and the family living in Colorado, we need to make sure that there's people that can get to and from California in order to continue searching for Raven Furlong, because no one else is going to now that her birthday was a couple weeks ago. She turned 18, so it's up to the family. So, yes, fundraising is a need right now because it costs money for a private investigator. It costs money to get the family to travel down there. And ultimately, if they come home, then we cross that bridge. But what we've done is we've set up accounts with these cases with NW Cave. So we are held accountable to the IRS. We are held accountable to the Secretary of State in the state of Washington, and then we disperse the funds to the family. And this way, we hope that we shut down any naysayers out there that tend to focus that energy onto families instead of helping the families find their child. So I wanted to make that clear, and if you would like to learn more about us or our Missing Persons Division, you can go to nwcave.org. We have a few minutes left. I want to give an opportunity to both Julia and Tanya to say anything that's on your mind, anything that you hope for, and where we go from here. And if you have any questions, feel free and call in. They'll take your calls. And then we encourage everyone to download the podcast after this airs. So, on Raven, Tanya, you know, where do you go from here?
My husband and I's motto is just we just keep putting one foot in front of the other, and we just keep following every possible lead that we can. You know, we do what we have to do. It's hard to say where we go from here. We go until we bring my daughter home. And, you know, I'm very fortunate in that I have a wonderful, supportive family, especially my sister Toby. She has done so much, and so much more than I can even speak to on the air. You know, with all of her help, because currently she has more time to invest than I do, and there's certain things that a mother just doesn't want to see, you know, and so to have that help has been amazing. To have an organization like NW Cave to be a voice and help and know which direction to go and, you know which media is good media, which media is going to rip us apart, which organization I need to call. And I didn't even know how to get my daughter registered with the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. If it wasn't for NW Cave, I didn't know that I could do that with her being a runaway. I was unaware because Aurora PD just says she's a runaway and she'll come home, and that didn't happen. And so there's little organizations like yours make a world of difference in a life like mine. And I just can't thank everyone who's helped, everyone who's donated, everyone who's done anything. I just can't thank anyone enough.
And we will not give up.
Keeps me strong. That's what keeps me strong.
We won't give up.
Keeps me going.
And we will not give up, Tanya and Julia. We will not give up.
Well, we so appreciate that.
We hit roadblocks the same as you do, but we will not give up. Your daughters will be found, and we will bring them home.
And that
gives me
obviously
huge comfort. Yes.
Julia, how about yourself? I know that, you know, with your family, you're based out of Colorado Springs right now, but prior to Cara gone missing, you actually your residence is in Chicago. So how has this added stress on the family? I mean, car gone missing is one thing, but there's always a family back at home going through the struggles of trying to find that missing child. So.
Right, right. We've had to kind of divide our family for this time period and just try to manage day by day. It isn't easy, and it's expensive, but we're just, like I said, sort of putting, and like Tanya said, putting one foot in front of the other, trying to take it day by day, trying to maintain hope and do what Karen said, too, not to sort of take things at face value rather than going off the deep end emotionally. I think that's something that if we try to do, we can manage the situation a little better for ourselves, because, you know, we still have to work, we still have to live our lives, but we want to do everything we possibly can, whatever that may be going forward. So,
Tanya, there was a question in the chat room for you. What were Raven's injuries at the time of her booking? Because her booking photo does show blood.
I am told that while she was being placed in the police car, her earring got torn out of her ear. And that is what led to her being released without her identity being verified, because they took her to get medical attention and released her at the hospital so that they would not be financially responsible for that medical attention.
Okay. Lynn, I hope you got that in the chat room. Again, that's hearsay, isn't it?
It is. It came from the Aurora PD officer who was following up on that. When Raven comes home,
we'll get the right answer, right?
Yeah, because I tried calling the hospital, but because they had her under a different name and they couldn't verify my relationship to her because they didn't have her under her legal name due to HIPAA laws, they wouldn't release any information to me. Nobody would speak with me. I kind of got passed around about 8 different people, and I was essentially told that I would have to fill out a release of records and they would have to verify my identity. And I can't verify that I'm related to a fake name that was given. So it was another dead end because proper protocol wasn't followed.
Interesting. Shelley, any last thoughts?
Media, and keep your faith, keep your hope, and call on us. And again, listeners, please call your tips in or email your tips to nwcave.org, and you're all in my thoughts.
Thank you.
Thank you, ladies, for joining us. Again, if you have any information on Cara Nichols, you can visit caranichols.org, or you can call the El Paso County Sheriff's Office at 719-390-5555. You can also email the detective at findcaranichols@gmail.com. For Raven Cassidy Furlong, visit ravenfurlong.org. You can call 911, or the family is asking that any tips regarding Raven can be emailed to tips@nwcave.org or call 1-800-THE-LOSS, which is the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. And for Kayla Croft Payne, go to kaylacroftpayne.org. And her family is asking that all tips be called in also to NCMEC at 1-800-THE-LOSS, or tips can be emailed to tips@nwcav.org. One side note regarding Crime Stoppers in Cara Nichols' case, the family did go to Crime Stoppers numerous times. Besides the emails and the phone calls, they never got a response. They were asking for a $1,000 reward to be posted in her case. No one ever got back with them. On the contrary, actually, when Julia and I called Crime Stoppers, the outgoing message was, due to budget restraints or budget cuts, we're unable to get to your call right now. And that's the same number people would call to issue a tip. So so that's why we're having all the tips come to us, and our investigators do call the folks back, do respond, and then if need be, then we're sending them to the appropriate person on each case so that there's a paper trail. There is a reward in Raven's case. The family has posted it, not the police. There's a $1,000 reward for information leading to Raven's whereabouts and her safe return. And again, your tips can be also phoned in to us at 360-852-8019. We thank everyone for joining us this evening. We know it's a long show, but it's been many, many months for these families to find their missing children. And we won't give up. We have a dream, a world free of violence and exploitation. And Raven and Kara are in that category, ladies. So thank you for joining us. Thank you, Shelley, for being with us. And we're going to end with the song Missing Child by Emil. Emil is out of Texas. He's a young kid, and he was introduced to us a few years back by HLN and Nancy Grace, and he's a great kid. So Missing Child by Emil. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
Can anybody out there hear my voice? Does anybody out there really care for a missing child? I'm a stranger in a strange place, and I don't know how I got here. I'm so far away from home. I would run, but I'm afraid to, 'cause I don't know what would happen. Could I make it all alone? If I could get someone's attention, one kind soul to look my way, maybe you would recognize me from the pictures where they say I'm a man. anybody out there really care?